A rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
Hello and welcome to A Rich Tradition College Football Podcast. I'm Spencer Van Horn. He's Robbie Steltenpole. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Roberto, how are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Just had my spring break with school. We go back tomorrow, which means we essentially have 6 weeks left until the school year's up, which is always encouraging to me. Got invited to join a D&D campaign, which starts next month, so I'm excited about that, obviously. I leave for Europe in, hold on. I got a countdown. I got a little app telling me when it's happening. In 49 days. Like, a lot of things showing up, Robbie, right now.
Gotcha. Who do you usually play as in D&D? Are you an elf or are you a sage or what is your character type?
I am usually some kind of spellcaster, so like a wizard and a sorcerer, a druid, something along those lines.
Gotcha. Is sage not one of the characters?
No, Sage is not one of the characters.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I don't play D&D, so I wouldn't.
No, it's
wouldn't
okay. Know. Sorry.
Not that I'm against it.
I'm here. All right.
So where what's we start? What do you want to start with?
No, what do you want to start with? What's new with you?
We just got done with spring break as well. Me and Robbie are sort of in the same business these days. So there's that. I watched the women's national championship today. I've been watching a little bit of them this week, so that was a lot of fun.
Yep, 7 minutes.
Yep, pretty good game. But I was concerned about Iowa's defense. I didn't know if they would be able to, because I mean, South Carolina ran away from NC State pretty quick in the second half of that Final Four game. So I was really worried about Iowa from a defensive standpoint. I mean, they had to go toe-to-toe with LSU, or blow for blow, I mean, with LSU. So it was going to be a stretch there. And I think Iowa ended up with 0 points coming off the bench, and South Carolina had like 37. So when your bench is getting outscored like that, that's obviously a big credit to some depth there. So hats off to South Carolina for winning the championship there on Sunday.
She did not have a flawless game necessarily, but Caitlin Clark did literally everything in her power to keep her team in that game, and they just continued to miss layup after layup after layup after layup after layup. They just missed so many layups and so many open shots. I was just really disappointed in some of, like, because they were cooking against LSU and hitting those shots. But they just, and it's not even like South Carolina was pressuring some of them. Like, some of these layups that they just missed was just really disappointing.
And they had some wide open shots on the wing. I mean, the defense was definitely catering to Caitlin, which, you know, everybody kind of has to do that because she's as good as she is. And so when those role players, I don't want to say role players because they've been very good all year long in their starters, but when those other players are getting those open opportunities, like you said, that you do have to knock that stuff down. And I think they did it early on in the first half, but as the second half went on, they continued to miss some of those outside shots that were kind of like, okay, you need those baskets with clock ticking down the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you get to watch any of the Final Four?
For the women, I did. I did not.
I'm sorry.
I missed
the Final Four
on
for the guys
for
yesterday.
The fellas. I missed out for the fellas.
It was good. I mean, both games ended up being blowouts, which most people assumed was going to happen. NC State had a really cool run. Glad that they were able to be that. I will say this. When it comes to guys, this may have been the most entertaining March Madness I've seen in a long time. Even though we're still ending up with two number one seeds playing each other for the title, overall, it was still just an incredible, incredible March Madness.
Good.
All right. You came to me with some questions and I've got some answers, and you got some answers, and then we're gonna shift gears drastically for the latter half of this podcast. But Spencer, you go ahead, give us a little preamble, and ask your question that we can dive into this evening.
Well, I think it's always fun this time of the year to start thinking about, you know, we've recently had, you know, we always talked about Nick Saban walking away, or when he would walk away, that we felt like it would be a decline, a small, short, slow decline over the course of a few years, and then he would exit. And that's essentially what we had happen. So that means we've had some other people winning championships, Georgia and now Michigan. So with that in mind, Kirby wins his first championship. Jim Harbaugh has won his first championship. Who else is it that is, you know, going forward with Nick Saban out of the game, and somebody's going to fill that void? There's a lot of different players available. Who else is winning? Who's going to be, or who has the best chance this upcoming year to win their first national championship from a head coaching perspective?
Do you want me to answer this question first, or do you want to?
No, go right ahead, because I mean, we're obviously going to have very similar answers, but no, you're more than welcome to get us started.
So when I thought of this question, like, two coaches came to mind immediately. I'll give you one of them, so we can just go tit for tat, kind of go back and forth for, you know, for about four or five of these. I think the first coach that came to mind is how the world did I just have a brain lapse and forget his freaking name? Ryan Day. Ryan Day was the first coach that came to mind. I think Ryan Day is the answer, in the sense of there is, except for Oregon, there's not a lot going against him in that conference this year. And, excuse me, he's got talent upon talent upon talent. He has put himself, they brought in a lot on the defensive side of the ball, or brought in a lot from the portal. He's got a new quarterback, which is one of my concerns for this year. We'll talk more about previews as the summer comes up. But Spencer, yeah, I sat back and I was thinking, man, Ryan Day for me is kind of the number one answer.
Yeah, I think if you were in charge of a sports book, you would certainly, I think the odds would have to go to Ryan Day. For as close as they've been over the last several years, and for the amount of attention that they've given to the transfer portal, guys like Caleb Downs trying to get better on that defensive side of the ball, knowing that they've got to be able to find those stops. And last year, you make the argument they had the defense to go win a championship. They just couldn't get that quarterback spot to elevate that side of the ball high enough to go and finish the job. So yes, Ryan Day, I would imagine, is the correct answer from the best chances standpoint of the conversation. And I agree with everything that you said.
Was he the first person you thought of too, or no?
Oh, one. Yeah. 100%.
Okay. 100%. Yes. So who is your, we'll come to you for number two then. Who is that second coach that came? I think I know the answer, but who's your number two coach?
Steve Sarkisian.
Wow, that's not who I thought of. I feel
who did you
like
think of?
I feel like a dum-dum. Okay, no. Let's rewind for a second, because we should have done this too. What will keep Ryan Day from winning it this year?
Well, now you're talking about an expanded playoff. So now you're talking about more games. So not only do you potentially have to face Georgia, but even if you, let's say they get the number two seed and they've got to face the number seven seed, and what happens if somebody gets hurt and that's that first round matchup, and then that makes you that much more vulnerable the rest of the way. And so there's now more games. I think more games is going to be something that will create a conundrum for everybody, or, you know, just a longer road for everybody. So more games would be at the top of the list. If Michigan and their new head coach, if they kind of hit the ground running, and obviously they're losing a lot to the NFL, including their quarterback, so it's going to be difficult. But if he kind of makes a seamless transition and that team kind of stays with their physical mode, and they, you know, shock or surprise some people, maybe that's a spot that they could get tripped up on. potentially. You know, and maybe it's Penn State that steps up and gives them a bump on the nose. But at this point, I think regular season losses start to dwindle a little bit because, well, maybe you can lose to Penn State and Michigan and still be in the playoff. Now, you might not be that 2 seed, but you might get the 5th seed or the 6th seed, and then you go back around to, well, more games.
Yeah, no, I agree. That just so your argument is not necessarily a specific team or a certain position group. It's really just, hey, there's a lot more games, right? In a nutshell,
that's the first thing that comes to mind. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. For me, it's twofold. It is Will Howard playing in a different type of offense in a different team with a team in general that I believe is going to be trying to change its philosophy offensively the whole offseason into a more running type, more physical type of offense. They're still going to have wide receiver. They're still going to have dudes at wide receiver, but they are going to try to move to a more physical, more ground and pound type offense. I think that is going to be just a little difficult for Will Howard and these other guys to come in and adjust to. The second thing is I am just so incredibly high on Oregon and Penn State this year that I think that Ohio State will have to play their like perfect versions of themselves to get past those guys.
And at that point you might be talking about seeing those teams twice because might see them in the regular season and then see them in the postseason as well. Because if Oregon and Ohio State both end up with only one loss, there's a good chance both of them are in the playoff.
Yeah. Now we'll say this, though. Ohio State, like you and I have not talked about doing a rankings, you know, maybe after spring gets done, maybe we'll do a rankings or whatever together, you know, heading into the offseason. But Ohio State is depending on when you talk to me, they're like number two or number three for me, like teams in the country. Coming into next season. Spencer, so my coach, or so you said Sark. Give me why Sark.
So, and this was almost just off the fact of how things went last year, the fact that he's building an offense and defensive line, and they're getting more physical, and he does have a quarterback coming back. He's obviously jumping into the SEC, so that's going to make things, you know, we talk about tougher roads. There's going to be a tougher road there. But I like the way he's building that team, and if that's continuing, and you continue to get better up front on both sides of the ball, and you continue to, you know, to elevate your quarterback play, which that'll be something that'll be important. But I think mostly my thought was he was really close last year. They were in the playoff. They were right there at the championship game, or they were in the playoff, I should say. And then he's building from the inside out. He's getting that offense and defensive line corrected. It feels like he's recruiting better talent to that program. And I think that's where my mind went first. I was not giving as much to the tougher road in the SEC as I think I should have now that we're sort of discussing it out loud.
No, it's okay. I still think, like, you know that they're still going to have one of the best offenses in the country, right? Like, that's not even up for debate. So I agree with you that the question is, oh man, what do you do now with the, you know, going through the SEC? So my actual number two coach, well, you already said what's going to hold them back. It's going to be going through the SEC. Also, who is going to be the elite pass catcher for them now that they've lost AD Mitchell and Xavier Worthy? Which, by the way, crazy stat for the day on AD Mitchell. 82% of AD Mitchell's passes caught last season were either first downs or touchdowns. 82%, Spencer.
I love that.
Nuts. Just nuts. Okay. So my number two coach was Lane Kiffin. I understand the SEC part of it, but I think one of the things that Lane Kiffin has done that I don't think a lot of people realize is he has incredibly, and I'm using the word incredibly, like with emphasis, he has incredibly upgraded his defense. Mm-hmm. Incredibly upgraded his defense. But also, here's the thing that not a lot of people are paying attention to, unless like you're crazy people like you and I are. Dude, he has been upgrading his coaching staff with former head coaches, like across the board. It is nuts. Like I still don't trust their defensive coordinator, because of what he was. I just think he got exposed last year against lead offenses, and I don't think that's a player thing. I think that's a schematic thing and a play calling thing to a degree. But the fact that they've got Pete Gold, yes. The fact that they've gotten so many former head coaches and elite coaches to be analysts, to be assistant coaches on the staff for this year, I really do think that this is a all-in season for them. And so I really could see Lane Kiffin getting that first dub.
Lane was the third name that I wrote down.
Okay. So you tell me.
For a lot of the same reasons.
What would hold him back, though?
Well, kind of like you mentioned, it's one thing to pour all of your resources into the defense. It's another thing for it to play out. You know, Ohio State got it to play out. They had it work, and then things kind of hiccuped on the offensive side of the ball. So it's one thing to pour all of that in. It's another to make it work, and Lane is sort of historically, you know, they've had soft defenses. So will those changes take? That would be the first big deal there. And then obviously, I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but the road in the SEC is going to be difficult as well. I don't know if they have – Matt Corral was a really special quarterback, in my opinion. And everything since him, I don't know if the offense has flourished as well as it did with him. So that would be another spot. Is the quarterback position ready to take that next step forward and kind of keep the offense, you know, almost as dangerous as it used to be? Last year, it felt like they were a good offense, and the year before that they were a good offense. Are they going to be a dangerous offense like they were under Matt Corral? So that would be another piece to that puzzle. You wanted the defense to get better for sure, but can you keep, you know, people really scared of your offense, which in some ways may help out defensively? You know, you can make the argument that LSU 19 team, their defense got a lot of help because, boy, that offense was just, you had to play keep up. So you pressed on offense a little bit, and the defense kind of got a chance to pin their ears back. So I think I'd look at that for Ole Miss, at least kind of off the rip.
Well, I agree with you. I think for me, it's two pieces. One, you've already mentioned. I'll talk about that in a second. But losing Judkins, I really do think it's going to be a big deal. Judkins, like, I mean, he's possibly the best running back in the country. And you just can't tell me that losing that doesn't hurt your team. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, you know, man, so many people thought going into last season, oh, Georgia's got so much depth. They got so many four and five stars. They'll be fine on the defensive line. No, losing Jalen Carter is a big deal.
Go ahead.
But just saying, like, losing Judkins, I really do think is a much bigger deal than people are making it. At the same time, I've already expressed this. You already know my feelings on this. I am not the biggest Jackson Dart believer. I'm just not. And I leave room for him to change my mind. But I think there are times in big games, in tight windows, he makes the mistake rather than making the big play. So.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it now, and Quinshon Judkins had 271 attempts. Jackson Dart had 119 attempts on the ground. Ulysses Bentley had 95 attempts on the ground. And then Jackson Dart threw the ball 358 times. So they had a drastic shift, obviously, in play calling, and maybe not drastic, but a shift in play calling where they ran the ball 41 times a game and only threw it 30 times a game. There's a part of you that thinks, well, and 23 passing touchdowns for Jackson Dart. Is some of that, you know, are you switching the gears a little bit? Obviously, Quinshon Judkins means a lot, but are you switching gears a little bit because you're not all that sold on Jackson Dart? Now, 30 attempts a game is you believe in your quarterback. You trust him enough.
Yeah.
But do you trust him to be dangerous?
Yeah. And, I mean, we know that they probably have the best in-game play caller in the country, if not Sark, right? You agree with that? Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your response.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry. Yes, I do agree with that, yes.
Okay. So play calling is not going to be a problem. Their defense could be an upgrade, which I think would be really cool. I do think their offensive line could be a concern as well. But, like, don't you remember last offseason where they brought in two former starting quarterbacks to ride the bench and sit behind Jackson Dart? I think Jackson Dart is going to be the reason why they either do or don't make the SEC championship, because if he's humming, I would bet money right now. If you guaranteed me, hey, Jackson Dart's going to play an above average season, then I'd book Ole Miss to be in the SEC title game. But because I can't, no one can guarantee that, obviously, or no one can guarantee an injury. I don't know what this Ole Miss team is going to be outside of Jackson Dart, because I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball as much as they have been without Judkins.
Yeah, and you're looking at, and a lot of this is splitting hairs because they won 11 games last year
and scored
35 points a game, and I think you noted it just a little bit there a second ago that we are definitely splitting hairs, but 58% pass completion through the air, and I'm not pointing that just at Jackson Dart. I think that's just an offensive passing game number altogether. 58% passing completion against Alabama there in the fourth game of the year, and then fast forward to the 10th game of the year, 58% pass completion against Georgia. 17 points and 10 points in, or 10 points and 17 points respectively, respectfully, in those two games. So again, you 48 points against Georgia Tech and 73 against Mercer, and 55 against Louisiana State's defense. You know, those are great numbers, but who are you when it comes to Georgia and Alabama? You know, what are you doing against those teams? You did get 38 against Texas A&M. Okay, but who are you when it really comes down to the other teams in your conference that have the elite talent? That's, I think, the next hurdle for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss.
Yeah. Okay. Give me, Spencer, give me one more. We'll do one more piece, and then we'll move on.
I had Brian Kelly written down on my list, but I don't know if I love that just because replacing the quarterback and the defense was as off as it was last year. So I don't know if I love him for making that push this upcoming season. Dan Lanning at Oregon might be the actual best next answer, and I apologize if I stole that from you.
It's okay.
Mike Norvell at Florida State's my official answer. That's my final answer.
Mike Norvell. Okay. I'll say this because you brought him up. I think that Brian Kelly would have been a great answer going into last season because of just how much the stars were aligning for him offensively. Who knew that his defense was going to be just absolute hot garbage, you know? All right, so you did steal my final answer, but I'll add a different one. James Franklin.
Yeah, that's where we were going. If it wasn't going to be Dan, I knew it was there. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just coming into this season, I think it's a lot like last season. It's not to the degree of Ole Miss because we've seen Jackson Dart actually play really well. They need Drew Aller to not suck in important games. They need offensive play calling to be more imaginative and more creative in these games, and that's why they went and got Kansas's OC. And so if Penn State's defense is going to be as good as they were last year or even better, which I think they will, their O-line should still be really good too. I know they're replacing that incredible tackle. But man, I really do think that Penn State doesn't make me go crazy. Like Penn State, I don't think is a crazy guess on that.
No, and I think most of the teams we've talked about have big question marks to answer. Ohio State has the quarterback. How are you going to elevate that side of the ball? Because, again, you can be better defensively, but, boy, you left a lot to be desired, and you kind of took a step back this past season because your offense was a liability at times against the better teams. So yeah. When we're talking about that thin air up top, you got to be really good. So Ohio State has the quarterback to answer. I think there's some quarterback things, smaller question marks, but still question marks for Steve Sarkisian and his quarterback position. I don't think Ewers has quite lived up to the astronomical hype that he's had, Lane Kiffin and the questions we asked about him. And so I think everybody on this list has some pretty decent sized question marks to answer if they're going to win their first championships. Are you surprised at all that we didn't say Lincoln Riley?
No. I've come to the agreement within my soul that until I see him produce a top 30 defense, I am not going to believe anything that he says. And I need to see them play defense before I believe that they're going to play defense. And I think you agree with that.
I do not hate that at all. I think they scored almost 42 points a game this past season. Obviously, their quarterback's going to be the number one pick in the draft most likely. And so that number could change, but you gave up 34 points a game. We just got done giving Ole Miss a lot of credit for scoring 35 points a game on offense. So yeah. And now you're going into a tougher conference as well. So and I think the history of Lincoln Riley and his defenses biting him in the butt is so large. You know, it goes all the way back to Oklahoma, and now here we sit at USC, and it's still the same problem. Yeah, I don't blame you for having that moment. And I think when you look back at Lane Kiffin, some people might say, "Well, what about Lane? Lane doesn't have all the great defenses?" I think we've seen his defenses play better and or produce a little bit better on that side of the ball than what Lincoln Riley has shown. I mean, they only gave up 22.5 points a game this past season. So, I mean, yep. They at least got the job done against some of the, lesser teams on their schedule, if you want to put it that way. I mean, they showed up against Vanderbilt. They showed up against Louisiana Monroe or Mississippi State. Again, those aren't the best teams on their schedule, but you at least showed up when you were supposed to, and you produced how you were supposed to against those teams from a points standpoint. So, you know, credit at least has to be given.
I just like back to USC for a second. It just goes back to like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Nick Saban wasted Bryce Young and Lincoln Riley wasted Caleb Williams. Neither of them, like, Bryce Young got an SEC title, which is awesome. I mean, he single-handedly won that game. But Caleb Williams never won any kind of title while at USC. How crazy is that to say, yeah, man?
It's pretty crazy to say. And then, too, when you think about wasting him, you know, there was a lot of criticism I felt like last year. You can go and find that a lot of it was just Caleb running for his life and making plays off script. Like, and I would love to hear more about that topic. So I'm not making any definitive statements, but it's almost as if, well, how do you have the number one quarterback in the league and we can't create things for him? We can't scheme things up. We can't, you know, or at least that became, it seemed the conversation has been that's been difficult for them last year, that a lot of things were off script. So I'm interested in how that happens. Maybe it's the pieces around, maybe the offensive line wasn't quite what they wanted, because at Oklahoma he always had really good offensive line, so maybe that had something to do with it. But you just, like you said, wasted. It feels like I wouldn't want Caleb Williams with all his talent doing off script stuff the whole game. All right, so the next thing we wanted to discuss, and me and Robbie have always liked pro wrestling, but we don't usually talk a ton about it. But Bleacher Report put out an article this week, and they kind of tricked us a little bit, and we'll get to that, I guess, a little bit later on. But ultimately, they put out a list this week of the Bleacher Report's wrestling's top 50 greatest WWE superstars of all time. And so they've ranked 50 of the best WWE superstars of all time. And that, of course, caught a lot of people's eye. It caught mine and Robbie's eye. Rob, what was your first sort of reaction when you saw that they put this list together?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's cool just to be able to try to make some kind of list like this, because it does create like really good conversations like you and I are having, like you and I had about it. But what immediately caught me off guard in a negative way was, okay, you say this is WWE, all-time WWE, but then as you look through these lists, as you look through the list and you see people that are listed, they're listing their ECW titles and their, you know what I'm saying? Like, or their WCW titles. It talked about WWE, but yet they listed a lot of things outside of WWE that I don't necessarily have a problem with, but it really kind of just messed up, in my opinion, it messed up the list out the gate with how they did that.
Yeah. So obviously the World Wrestling Entertainment Company owns ECW and they own WCW. And so those titles have flowed under the umbrella of WWE. And I think all of the listing of WCW championships 1-4 Triple H are all the ones he won on WWE programming while the WCW championship was still its championship. So while I agree with what you're saying, I think that's the explanation. Same thing with the ECW championship, that they've, in an effort to keep those brands alive and maybe placate the fans, they've kept those championships alive and they've made programming out of it, I guess. But I agree with you, because it's confusing when you go through and you look, and I guess we can start it off at number 24. Yeah. And you're looking at some of what people have won, and then you look down at number 24 and you're talking about one of the greatest. I mean, Ric Flair has a top 4 resume, but then we're excluding so much from his resume because it was all won in different companies and such. That's a little bit jarring. And then you're reading that here's WCW championships counting over here, but they're not counting here. And again, exactly. I gave the explanation and I think that's what it is. But ultimately, it still feels like I was jarred. I kind of thought this was a top 50 wrestlers of all time list. The WWE superstars part of it is kind of the catchphrase, or not the catchphrase, but it's the string attached to the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a little bit jarred and had to regroup myself once I saw the great Ric Flair at number 24 of all places.
Yeah, and because
there's not a list that exists where you rightfully put Ric Flair outside the top 10.
Agreed.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And no, it's okay. And then, like, you put Rob Van Dam on there, but they listed almost all of his ECW stuff. Like, and this is not me saying Rob Van Dam doesn't belong there, but just going back to the criteria that they listed of why they're ranked in a certain spot or not. And then, so then you list these WCW stuff for certain people. Okay, well, if you're going to list WCW stuff, why isn't Sting on there? Like, why isn't Sting on the top 50 at all? So, I was not the biggest fan of that. Also, I think you agree with me, for this being a top 50 of all time, there were a lot of people, there were a lot of wrestlers listed who hadn't become famous outside of the last 10 years that were on this list.
You have plenty of modern day wrestlers that are listed, including the likes of a Kofi Kingston. Sasha Banks is at number 41, even though I don't think she's participated in the company in quite some time now.
Yeah, but she's that, over at AEW. That ultimate.
Is she? Did she enter into AEW?
I think so. Yeah.
So I mean, that's nice, I guess, to try to keep some modern flavor into it and keep people interested in it. Because I guess a bunch of young people start scrolling through and they don't see familiar names, they're gonna dip out because they don't know who Ravishing Rick Rude is at number 42. They're not familiar with what he's been capable of, or superstar Billy Graham, who's down at like 38 or something like that. Those names are not going to resonate with young readers. So I would imagine that's the explanation for keeping a bunch of young names on this list, because, well, we need young readers.
Yeah. Do you agree with me, though, that Sting not being on the list sucks?
So, yes, in totality, yes, but Sting never wrestled as a WWE superstar. So I think that that's why
He had one WrestleMania against Triple H, but yes.
He did, but you're right about that. But that was one program that they did for him. It wasn't enough to get on the top 50 list. Because again, Ric Flair's at 24, and they only list, you know, a very small amount of accomplishments for him while under the WWE label, essentially. So,
yeah.
You know, two WWE championships, the Intercontinental champion, 3-time tag team, Royal Rumble winner in 92, Hall of Famer in 08 and 12 as a member of the Four Horsemen, and I guess as a solo performer as well. So I think the fact that Sting's wasn't much of a WWE superstar is why he's not on this list. But again, yeah. that's the sort of the trick of the article is, WWE superstars. So we get to leave Sting off and we get to put Flair at number 24. You get to kind of be sensational, if you will.
Yeah.
What did you like about the list?
I like that everybody who I, well, before I say that, if I'm not mistaken, where did Stone Cold end up?
Two.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, selfishly, every wrestler except for two people, except for Sting and Dean Malenko, I like made the list. Mm-hmm. And I just appreciated the diversity in that. And I like that certain characters, he may not be my number one, but I like that Bret Hart was number one because of just how much he is adored and loved and revered within the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, so I do think the argument for Bret Hart is an interesting one. He kind of carried the company during a low point when, you know, you talk about rivalries. Rock and Austin got to work with obviously one another, but then they got to work with Triple H and they got to work with Shawn and they got to, especially Stone Cold, if you just think of him by himself. He did work with Shawn and Hart, but then he got to work with Taker and Kane and Mankind and Triple H and Rock. I mean, there's five people right there that are all-timers in their own right. And Hart didn't necessarily have that until later in his career. Early on, he's working with Yokozuna and Diesel and guys that are big names in wrestling, but you kind of have to dig a little bit under the surface to really understand why Yokozuna and Diesel were as big as they were. And they almost fumbled Diesel. And then they tried to give things off to Lex Luger as the next Hulk Hogan, and that didn't work because the personality just wasn't the right fit. Lex wasn't going to be the eat your vitamins kind of guy that Hogan and Terry was able to be. And then later on, you do get some Owen Hart. That stuff was great, but I don't think Owen ever quite reached. He always stayed in the shadow a little bit, unfortunately. And then you finally get to Shawn and you finally get to Austin. He helps launch those careers, both at WrestleMania, with the Iron Man match and then the double turn match at WrestleMania 13, it was, with Austin with the blood and the sharpshooter and passing out and that whole deal. So he helps launch those two guys. And then he's at the center of the Montreal Screwjob, which is kind of the final launching point for what would become the attitude error. So he not only helps to make Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels, who's an all-timer, he helps make Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's an all-timer, and then he launches Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who as the bad guy, who then goes to square off with Austin, and that is that beats WCW, and that beats everything, and that sends wrestling into its next golden age. So I'm glad that you said that, because I agree. I think Hart is owed a lot more than maybe he earns. He always kind of ended up getting passed over. I think the article mentions that. I think Vince McMahon was always trying to find the next new flashy toy to attach to, and that was some of that was Diesel and some of that was Luger. And he certainly became obsessed with how he worked and favored Shawn Michaels at time as the new flashy toy. So there was always a picking somebody else over Hart, but he stayed steady through all of that and was a great champion and a great performer in the ring. Some of Yokozuna's best matches are matches with Bret Hart. And how do you have a great match with a man who's that big?
Yeah.
Some of that's Yokozuna being as good as he is, as athletic as he is for being big. But when you're small like Bret and you have to have a great match with Yokozuna, how do you do that? Well, yeah. Bret was able to make it work. And so I don't hate Bret at number one either. It's not my top four, but I don't hate him at number one.
No, well said. No, I completely agree with you. Like I said, I think, man, there are so many like modern wrestlers on here. And I understand you're trying to diversify as best you can to, like you said, to bring in all types of viewers on this. There's just certain people I didn't understand that were on there. Who do you think they got? Like Becky Lynch at 23, like blows my freaking mind. Like I'm looking at the history here, like her biggest match didn't happen until 2018 and 2019. But yeah, she's freaking 23 of top 50 wrestlers of all time. I think Triple H is too low. The fact that he's ranked.
I think we can go with the two lows. I think Flair starts us off at too low at 24.
Yeah.
And then Triple H at 21 is way too low. Now they do write in there, Rob, I think you can see it in there, that they write about his controversial relationship with Steph or his compromising relationship with Steph. And does that sort of inflate his stats because, well, hey, he's sleeping with the boss's daughter? Is he getting a push because politically he's playing a game? If that's the case, if that's why they're putting him at 21, and I guess that plays into that's exactly what they're doing, I don't hate that, but I don't think I'd be putting him at 21 and then have Roman Reigns at 13.
Yeah.
You're telling me that Roman Reigns' career is that much better than
CM Triple Punk. H's? CM Punk's ranked higher than him.
Who's that?
CM Punk. He's ranked number 20. He's ranked above Triple H.
No.
Also, like, and this is just however you view, like, I need to be clear, like, this is however you view him as a wrestler, but I really think Brock Lesnar is overrated.
Oh, no.
I think he's, huh?
Oh, no. I disagree with that completely. Go ahead.
It's okay. I understand that he plays a role. He's played a very important role. I have just found him to be boring. Just like the later matches of Goldberg, I've just found him to be boring.
Oh, that's yeah. Right. Yeah, you don't want to hold you don't want to hold Goldberg against anybody. Goldberg was Bill was not a worker. There was a reason why Bill got the streak and Bill had, 17-second matches with people because Bill just was not. He didn't get it. He didn't get the performing side of things. But yeah, and I will say to your point, I've not watched a ton of wrestling over the last few years, so I'll stay away from criticizing too many of the new people, and I'll stay away from that part of that second half part of Lesnar's career. But boy, those first few years and that program they did with with Rock and so much with Kurt Angle as well. Oh yep. Boy, that stuff is gold to me. So I like the early career of Brock Lesnar for sure. He's obviously been included in some of this nastiness with McMahon's. So that stuff aside, just as a performer in the ring is all we're talking about when it comes to Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. What else? Any other thoughts you want to throw out there on this?
I did think Macho Man, as high as he was kind of surprising.
Yes.
I don't think I'd have Macho Man quite so high. And it's funny to put Macho Man so high and then see Shawn Michaels so low. Now, Michaels is only at 7, or I'm sorry, 8. But, I mean, Ric Flair has called Michaels the greatest of all time, and lots of other people have called Michaels the greatest. And I think in the ring, Michaels is the greatest. And I think he's had some sharpening of the tools when it comes to microphone work. And obviously, Macho's going to get a lot of credit for his longevity. He was really good in WCW and had some great programs there with Diamond Dallas Page. And he's unbelievable on the microphone, just watching and listening. He's so distinct. And so I don't hate him at 2, but I did think, wow, or whatever number he is. Let me just find it. He's at 4. No, he's at 3. I'm sorry. Macho at 3, it was a little bit surprising, but I don't, like I said, I don't completely hate it, but I did think it was a little eye-opening. Do you have a top 4, a Mount Rushmore of pro wrestlers? Not just a personal favorite, but would you put together a objective one and a favorite?
Yeah, I think for me, objective and Rushmore would be 5 or 4. Always mess that part up.
4.
Would you say 4? Okay, 4. If I was going to do 4, I think in the time that I've been watching wrestling since I was a little kid, I have to put Shawn Michaels, I have to put The Rock, Stone Cold, and then I probably would put Ric Flair. But my favorite top or Mount Rushmore would be Sting, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, and The Rock, with Stone Cold being just outside at 5.
Yeah, so for me, objectively, I'd go Hogan, Flair, Austin, Michaels, and then personally switch me Hogan for Taker. So Taker, Flair, Austin, Michaels, with Hogan and Rock just outside the top spot, and they're bickering and fighting for, you know, one of those positions. But I think that would be where I would go for that. And if I were doing a top 10 and I could kind of make my 10th spot almost anything, I give a lot of respect, and I thought the list did a pretty good job of putting Mick Foley at 15. I love Mick Foley. Yeah. I put him in my top 10 personally. I think he's incredible.
Yeah. No. What I was going to say is earlier, I think for me, I think him being at 15 is fair. Like, I thought that was like a good placement. I also thought Chris Jericho at 16 was like kind of a perfect placement as well, because I do think he matters. I do think he's important for wrestling too.
Yes, 100%. Andre at 14 feels, I could see some historians being like, no, you're not putting Andre outside the top 10. I think when you talk about what Hogan and Austin have meant to the business, from a skyrocketing it and sort of putting it where it is, Andre did something as a, I think they've called him, they build him at times as the 9th wonder of the world. And so,
okay.
I think from that standpoint and his bigness and being in a movie as well, they turned him into a movie star too with the Princess Bride. I think there's an element of him that encapsulates his mythos encapsulates a little bit of what Austin and Rock would use to launch the business the way that they did. And I wouldn't be surprised if you can make the argument that Andre sort of sets a stage for Hogan, and then Hogan sets the stage for Austin. And that, you know, and you can make Bret Hart sort of holds the stage together. Shawn Michaels does his part in there as well. Shawn wasn't always the greatest champion, so Shawn being a little bit further down is not necessarily terrible to me on some cases. But I do think Andre being at 14, I could see historians really losing their minds over that.
Yeah.
And then having Roman Reigns ahead of him. Oh boy.
Yeah. Just like, I guess recency bias is probably the best way to put it. You know?
I don't get the impression. Every time I hear people talk about Roman, it's almost like they say WWE's trying to force him on us.
Absolutely.
That they're trying to shove him down your throat. And
that's what I've heard as well.
Yeah. So that part of it's kind of frustrating. The other name that I love on this list, absolutely love and would love to see him higher if it was possible, but I think 18 is a really good spot for Eddie Guerrero. I think Eddie is a tremendous talent right there with Kurt and with Brock, and can put on a show as well as anybody part of that cruiserweight division at WCW, and then coming over with Jericho and Ray and Dean Malenko and such, and
Juventud Guerrero, Chris Benoit Ultimate Dragon. He's like, yes.
Eddie's a guy that, go ahead.
Just what I was just going to say, like what he was able to do for Hispanic wrestlers in America, I just think was a big deal. Just like a really big deal.
And the program he ran, I mean, he was funny. The program he ran with China was a lot of great, was really fun, and Latino Heat and Lie, Cheat, and Steal, and the program he put on with Bradshaw, you know, that stuff was really good. Really good from him. Anybody else on this list that you wanted to make note of? I'm kind of surprised we didn't talk about Austin as much, but he kind of speaks for himself there at number two.
Yeah, there are certain wrestlers that I just don't think need much discussion, because it's just like, yeah, you know, like The Rock. I just don't.
Yeah, we didn't talk about him much.
I don't think you have to, you know. Yeah. I think he has just done so much and meant so much. I mean, he's 52 years old, and I didn't watch it, but he wrestled last night at WrestleMania, you know.
Yeah.
Just continual to be important, and to change the way that things, like, you know, to change the way that we, you know, you talked on the mic or the storylines. Just, I don't know, it was just really cool.
So with that in mind, or not with that in mind, but one last piece that I wanted to bring up, and it doesn't connect to The Rock because he's very decorated with championships, but Undertaker's at number four, and there can really be an argument made that he never needed a championship. And I've heard this, he didn't need to have the belt. And I think Dusty Rhodes was a guy that they sort of pointed at and said, he doesn't need to be champion. You don't have to put the belt on him for him to work. And I've always thought that was an interesting thing, because I always felt like, well, if the company trusts you, and that's the trajectory, you have belts. Taker was a guy, only four world heavyweight championships for him, or WWE championships, and I guess seven total with the world heavyweight championship in there as well. But he was a guy, and his gimmick kind of felt like you don't have to put the title on him for him to work and for people to like him and for him to draw. Roddy Rowdy Piper was another guy that was similar to that as well. Roddy brought along the Intercontinental Championship and turned it into what it is, but he's on this list and he's in the top 10 with no other championships to his name outside of a tag champion and 2005 Hall of Fame. The psychology of him and his stuff on the mic, and him being that first kind of deranged sort of kind of guy, I give a ton of respect to the list and to just Roddy Rowdy Piper on his own for for what they were able to do as guys that didn't win championships. And then the last one on that note was the great and wonderful Jake the Snake, who's on the list at like number 30 or something. And he too never won any championships. They never put a belt on him of any kind. And yet here he is. Yeah, there he is at number 32 on the list. He's a Hall of Famer in 2014. So I tip my cap to that kind of idea that Jake was just always so good that he didn't have to put a championship on him. He didn't need it. He didn't. I don't know if he wanted it, but he could perform and he could make it all work. He gets a lot of credit for the psychology in the ring. And I think all of that's really, really cool for a guy like Jake the Snake and Roddy Rowdy Piper.
No, I think that's good. Good stuff, man. Thank you for this.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of fun. Booker T at 33, I would think, is a little low. I would love to be able to move him up higher. I think Booker's a little bit underrated. Ricky Steamboat at 34 is also a little bit low. Ultimate Warrior at 35, you can make the arguments too high. You can probably push him back a little bit, and that would be okay. Although his rise to dominance was pretty astronomical. I mean, he got shot out of a cannon there in the 80s. Also,
him and Sting, Road Warriors.
Yep. So, and I know a lot of people are already well aware of it, but he was a pretty big butthead back in those days too, which is why him and Sting didn't last too long together. He wanted to kind of go off on his own, and I think Sting wanted to learn how to be a wrestler, and Ultimate Warrior was not interested in that. I think Ultimate Warrior was interested in the show and being the showman and just coming out and looking strong and being the guy from another planet, unknown or whatever it is, however it was that he used to say it, which was always cool. His promos were great, but he wasn't a wrestler, and Sting went off and became a wrestler, and Ultimate Warrior just kind of wanted to be a show, essentially. Yeah. So rest in peace, certainly, but I think you can move him back a little bit. All right, I think that's it until I start scrolling through this more and keep thinking of more people to talk about and put in different places.
I do start work tomorrow, so going to sleep at a good time.
You start work tomorrow. Okay, yep, go to bed at a reasonable time. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Later.